From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. And so we came to the last debate. There were real issues on the table. Chris Wallace did a pretty good job of bringing the questions, keeping things on track. And still, the out there broke in. Donald Trump to Hillary Clinton on Russia and Putin.
Clear. You're the puppet.
It's pretty clear you won't admit
no,
that
the rush.
And Clinton on Trump's assertion that he might not accept the November 8th results.
That's horrifying.
That's horrifying. This hour on Point, the final presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and their strategy with just days to go now before Election Day. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on what did you make of the final face-off and where have these debates taken your understanding of the candidates of the country? Joining me now from Washington is Anita Dunn. She's a Democratic strategist and former White House communications director, advisor to President Barack Obama's presidential campaigns, now a managing director at SKD Knickerbocker, a public affairs firm in Washington. Anita Dunn, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you. Also with us from Washington, Chris Wilson. He's a Republican pollster and strategist, CEO of Wilson Perkins Allen Research, data science firm. He's also the former director of data analytics and digital strategy on Ted Cruz's primary campaign. Chris Wilson, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Main takeaway, Chris, from the debate last night. Yours.
I almost feel like Donald Trump wants Hillary Clinton to be president. It's like everything, even though he had a great, I shouldn't say great, that's too strong. He had a good first 30 minutes. Once he refused to agree to accept the results of the election, even though you played the clip of Hillary Clinton calling it horrifying, you could see a big smile break out across her face. Because at that point, I think anybody watching knew that that would dominate any coverage of it. So any points he may have scored on issues like the Second Amendment or abortion or anything else where he did well, that would be overshadowed. And it was unfortunate for those of us who may have moved on beyond Trump as the presidential nominee and looking to hope that we could, as Republicans, hold down ballot seats. And it makes it even more difficult than it was prior to the debate.
Anita, what about it? There was substance last night. They got to real issues. I thought Chris Wallace ran a pretty good, tight show. Did it all come down to the, hey, I won't necessarily accept the outcome of the November 8th election comments from Donald Trump?
You know, it was almost as though there were two debates last night, Tom. And I agree with Chris. I actually thought Trump executed as well as he has during any of the debates for the first section, if almost like debate A and debate B last night. And debate A was substance and two very different visions of America, two very different sets of positions on issues, clear choices between the candidates and substance. And then it all seemed to go off the rails for Trump. He needed to have a great debate and he needed her to make a big mistake. Instead, she had a great debate and he made a huge mistake last night. And so I think that as we head into the final days of this campaign, the trajectory that she was on going into this third debate has, if anything, been accelerated.
Ever since we saw the Access Hollywood tapes come out, Donald Trump has been out big time talking about a rigged election coming. And last night, Chris Wallace went right at that. Trump would not say that he would accept the results of the U.S. election when pressed by Wallace from Fox News.
I want to ask you here on this stage tonight, do you make the same commitment that you will absolutely, sir, that you will absolutely accept the result of this election?
I will look at it at the time. I'm not looking at anything now. I'll look at it at the time. What I've seen is so bad. First of all, the media is so dishonest and so corrupt, and the pile-on is so amazing. The New York Times actually wrote an article about it that they don't even care. It's so dishonest, and they've poisoned the minds of the voters.
Chris Wilson, you're a Republican strategist. Is there precedent for this in a presidential campaign at this point in the proceedings?
There's not. And I almost feel like if you listen to Trump talking about the media, and as Republicans, we always felt like you kind of have to work the refs a little bit, if you will. But I can tell you the media I dealt with in the primary process working for Senator Cruz couldn't have been more fair, I felt like, in terms of the way that they covered us. However, I also recognize that Trump got a dominant share of the media, which I think catapulted him into the position he is right now.
But he's complaining about that, saying that they're burying him. He has
right.
said
now
there is a conspiracy to bury him.
It is. And it's, like I said, there's always this feeling about Republicans, you have to work the refs. But we've never gone, never has a Republican campaign, a Republican candidate gone that negative on the media. And you think, there's no winning strategy there. Anyone who's going to vote for him because they disagree with the media is already voting for him. And I just can't help but wonder a little bit if this is just the beginnings of the setting up of a Trump network. And he's kind of moved on from a presidential campaign to looking at how he continues to make millions of dollars after the campaign's over. And the way in which he continues to take on the press and make this about the media is, I think, just it's going way too far.
Wait, what are you saying there? There's been this talk about Trump laying the groundwork for his own new media empire right after the campaign. Is that what you're suggesting there, or something?
It is a bit of a suggestion, yes. I think it is. There's no secret in amongst people who pay attention in D.C. and listen to what is going on with several people around Trump, that those discussions are taking place. And it is, I almost wonder if, in a sense, Trump has decided or come to the conclusion that he cannot win. And so because of that, he looks at the significant damage to the Trump brand. It's the stays at his hotels are down. And so because of that, he's moving into what is the next stage of his life. And I just, because there is no winning strategy associated with the way in which he is attacking the media and his claims about the rigged election due to what he calls a dishonest media, there's really no other logical conclusion than to think that this is just somehow laying the groundwork for the next stage of his life.
That's pretty wild. Talk about the media being somehow about Trump business. But there's more than the media, the reputation, the work of the media on the line here. Much more than that. Maybe the Republic or the Democratic character of the Republic. Listen, this is a long exchange, but here he's still being pressed by Chris Wallace. And he goes at Hillary Clinton, says she should not even be allowed to run. And then there's the whole exchange about American history and tradition, about accepting the results of elections. Here we go.
Tell you one other thing. She shouldn't be allowed to run. She's guilty of a very, very serious crime. She should not be allowed to run. And just in that respect, I say it's rigged. Because she should never have been allowed to run for the presidency based on what she did with emails and so many other things.
But, sir, there is a tradition in this country. In fact, one of the prides of this country is the peaceful transition of power, and that no matter how hard fought a campaign is, that at the end of the campaign, that the loser concedes to the winner, not saying that you're necessarily going to be the loser or the winner, but that the loser concedes to the winner and that the country comes together in part for the good of the country. Are you saying you're not prepared now to commit to that principle?
What I'm saying is that I will tell you at the time. I'll keep you in suspense.
Well,
okay?
Chris, let me respond to that because that's horrifying.
Anita Dunn, she says it's horrifying. He says, I'll keep you in suspense. Now, his supporters are saying, look, how can you judge an election before it's been held? Look at Al Gore in 2000 challenging what went on down in Florida. It's just logical that one would wait until the election's been held to talk about accepting the results. At the same time, people are saying this is without precedent. This is even Hillary Clinton says this is a threat to our understanding, our exercise of democracy.
Well, I'm with her on this one, and I think I'm with Chris Wallace as well. You know, one of the extraordinarily moving things about this country we live in is this peaceful transfer of power that we go through. And it's pretty extraordinary when you look at other countries and you look at the fact that it doesn't happen over there or in their recent history. In so many countries, it has not happened. And that, you know, presidents willingly and just walk out of that White House, get on that helicopter, and go away and give the reins to somebody else. And that's a pretty extraordinary thing. What Donald Trump is doing is once again pushing the envelope of what is acceptable norms and political behavior beyond which most people, you know, can only dream. Of course, if you're in a tight election, and Chris would agree with me on this, you know, if you're in a congressional race and the final margin's 20 votes, you're going to ask for a recount because you want to make sure that the real winner is, you know, that nobody made a mistake, things happen, whatever. But it is unprecedented to announce in a presidential campaign that you actually think that there's a high probability that something nefarious will happen to skew the results of the election against the will of the voters. And that's what he's doing here. So this is a little different from all of the precedents that his supporters are trying to throw forward this morning. Al Gore conceded. He conceded after the Supreme Court ruled 5-4, and a lot of Democrats didn't want him to do that. but he understood the importance of the peaceful transfer of power in a way that Donald Trump appears unwilling to acknowledge.
Hillary Clinton went right at that, saying, you know, he blames somebody else for always. Whenever he's failing, he blames somebody else. Here she was.
That is not the way our democracy works. We've been around for 240 years. We've had free and fair elections. We've accepted the outcomes when we may not have liked them. And that is what must be expected of anyone standing on a debate stage during a general election.
And this from Hillary Clinton.
He is denigrating. He's talking down our democracy. And I, for one, am appalled that somebody who is the nominee of one of our two major parties would take that kind of position.
Chris Wilson, you're a Republican here. Is Donald Trump talking down our democracy, as Hillary says?
Well, he's certainly not helping it. I mean, I don't think there's going to be any end result that hurts our democracy, to be candid with you, because I just don't think he has the platform to do that any longer.
But you just told us he could build a platform and it could go on.
Well, he could through a media network. That's right. But he's never going to get beyond the 35% or so of Americans right now who are going to end up voting for him. And that, when I say that, I don't mean to imply that he'll only get 35%. But I think that's probably his hardcore base.
But that's a lot of people.
About him.
That's a lot of people to put in the mindset of this is a rigged conspiracy of a democracy.
Well, it is, but I'm not going to delve into the Al Gore defense because I do think that's a bit myopic and really isn't at the paw here because Anita was very articulately handled. Mm-hmm. The fact that Al Gore was honorable about it. But I will point out that Hillary Clinton, in her official capacity as Secretary of State, did suggest that Jeb Bush stole the election for George Bush. So she's not without blame here. Yeah, as governor of Florida, thank you. And so she's not without blame here. And this the sort of throwing of charges back and mm-hmm. forth about who may do what to steal an election is not unprecedented. It is wrong and it shouldn't be done by Trump and it shouldn't have been done by Clinton when she did it as Secretary of State. I think the fact is our democracy is based on our belief in the system, and anyone who makes comments and undermine that should be immediately discredited and denounced by people in their own party.
Need to be based on fact. If there's anything out there. Chris Wilson, Republican pollster and strategist, please stand by. Anita Dunn, Democratic strategist, both with us today from Washington. We're looking at the last debate last night. You can join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the last debate last night, Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, who won't say if he will accept the results of the vote November 8th. Chris Wilson is with us, Republican pollster and strategist, CEO Wilson Perkins Allen Research. Anita Dunn is with us, former White House Communications Director, Senior Advisor to President Barack Obama's presidential campaigns, Democratic strategist at SKD Knickerbocker. You can join us in this hour. What did you see? What did you hear last night? How does our democracy deal with what we're hearing? Were you satisfied with Clinton's answers on WikiLeaks, with Donald Trump's answers on Russian interference and Vladimir Putin? Are you worried about Second Amendment rights under Clinton, about losing abortion rights under Donald Trump? And what about the open borders quote from WikiLeaks and Hillary Clinton? What about the wall? What about Trump and women? Anita, Chris, and Anita, I'll come first to you. There were last night real issues talked about on the Constitution, on the Supreme Court, on the Second Amendment and abortion and immigration and the economy. More substance, I think, than I saw in either of the first two debates. What do you think, if any of those, might be most consequential as voters look at these two candidates, Anita?
I think the discussion around the Supreme Court at the beginning of the debate was a very consequential discussion for voters. It has been, in many ways, the fallback, last reason to vote for Donald Trump that Republicans have been trying to promote out there. Well, but the Supreme Court. And I thought that it was also Secretary Clinton's great moment talking about the court and in particular talking about abortion and a woman's right to choose. It was passionate. It was heartfelt. It was in clear terms that women in particular could really understand. And I thought that, and it, certainly for millennials, for some of the voters that were really trying to get out to vote, I think it was a very powerful moment for her.
Chris, what about the abortion back and forth and how Americans look at that? This has been a very divisive issue for a long time. How does it play out now in a presidential campaign at this point?
Boy, it's really difficult for me to assess that just from a standpoint of I found Trump's defense of the life position to be so inarticulate that it was almost that I had trouble following what he was even talking about. And I feel like I understand the issue fairly well. So I think from that, you know, Donald Trump proved that he has a complete lack of knowledge of issues outside of a couple of key points that he made on the Supreme Court and on guns, really specifically to a Supreme Court on the Heller decision. But even on that, whenever he and Hillary had a back and forth, and she made the comment, I don't know if she was wrong, if she was just wrong or was misleading, arguing that she would disagree with the Heller decision for a specific reason that had been actually struck down.
This is on gun control, yeah.
Yeah, on gun control, that's correct. And from that standpoint, he was in a perfect position to come back and correct her on it if he had any level of knowledge of these issues. And it almost, I think the lack of knowledge that he exhibits even on that back and forth is disqualifying. And I know it's tough for me to, you're probably looking for me to argue with Anita on these a little bit more than I am, but
I am kind of, I mean, and you were a Ted Cruz guy. Are you just wishing he would have been disqualified before the Republican convention? I mean, after all, he was nominated. That is a kind of
qualification. He was, and you know what, that was the voter's choice, but I couldn't help but sit and watch that, thinking that Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio or even Jeb Bush would have eviscerated Hillary Clinton on those issues. It would not have even been close in my clearly biased opinion on that. And it's really difficult because I believe that we have – I mean, I think Hillary Clinton is the weakest Democrat nominee since Michael Dukakis. But she's going to win most likely in a landslide because we nominated someone even weaker. And that hurts my soul to have to observe.
She was punching last night when on abortion. She said, look, Donald Trump said – she stood up for abortion rights very plainly in very straightforward terms and sent Donald Trump, as he had, has remarked that at one point in the campaign, said that women who had abortions should face punishment.
Well, and Tom, it's Anita, and I want to jump in here because the other thing that she did during this segment was also really rise to the occasion with a stirring defense of funding for Planned Parenthood and making that contrast very strongly against Donald Trump. And this really is an issue that crosses party lines and well into independence, especially for women. And I thought her entire debate performance was one that was particularly strong when it came to women, even when she was discussing Social Security. She referred to the problems women in particular have on Social Security because of their lower earning power during their professional years. And if you're looking at who are the undecided voters, who are really the swing voters at this point, there are going to be some millennials, and there's certainly some women out there. And that her debate performance really spoke to undecided voters as well as the broader American people. You know, Chris, I don't agree with you that she would have been eviscerated by the other candidates. The point here, she actually cracked the code of how to debate Donald Trump in a way that Marco Rubio didn't, that Ted Cruz didn't, and that Jeb Bush didn't. And she got under his skin in a way that not one of the other 15 candidates did during the primaries.
I want to look at immigration. It's been a big issue for Donald Trump in this campaign, which means it's been a big issue, period. And what he meant by this, he said last night, when he would early in a Trump presidency, he would go after bad hombres.
We're going to get them out. We're going to secure the border. And once the border is secured, at a later date, we'll make a determination as to the rest. But we have some bad hombres here, and we're going to get them out.
Who's he talking about, Chris? And is he talking about in the U.S., in Mexico? What did he mean exactly? We know there's a big drug trade. That's for sure.
It was confusing to me. And if you want to give him the benefit of the doubt, he was talking about the trafficking of drugs that comes across the border. It's been well written about in terms of coming across the dark heroin epidemic. Mm-hmm. That's really it's
terrible. I mean,
the impact on the communities up in, mm-hmm. is throughout the United States. It's really mm-hmm. it's one of the most undercovered stories, I think, of our time right now, because it's not as sexy as maybe some as the marijuana or some of the other issues, some of the other drug problems that we've had. But it is black tar heroin is the exact specific term I'm trying to talk about. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt in thinking that that was what he was referring to. But I'm not really even sure he knows what he's referring to when it gets down to it. It's more of he's trying to be cute. And I'm sure at some point that came up in debate prep and it popped into his mind. He said, so let's bring it up and see if it sticks.
Some bad hombres. Chris Wallace went to Hillary Clinton on this issue of open borders, that WikiLeaks leak that's come out. And, of course, she pivoted off this very quickly when WikiLeaks came up to attack Donald Trump about what she says is his closeness to Vladimir Putin and Russia and their interference in the U.S. campaign. But here's Wallace asking Clinton to explain the remarks about open borders. This was made to a Brazilian bank in 2013. He pointed out that she was paid $200,000-plus for this speech. She said her remarks related to energy policy.
Secretary Clinton, I want to clear up your position on this issue, because in a speech you gave to a Brazilian bank for which you were paid $225,000, we've learned from the WikiLeaks that you said this, and I want to quote, "My dream is a hemispheric common market with open trade and open borders. So that's
Thank
the
you.
Question. That's the question. Please quiet everybody. Is that your dream, open borders?
Well, if you went on to read the rest of the sentence, I was talking about energy. You know, we trade more energy with our neighbors than we trade with the rest of the world combined. And I do want us to have an electric grid, an energy system that crosses borders. I think that would be a great benefit to us.
Open borders, all about energy, $225,000, not bad for a day's work or an hour's work, whatever that was. But what about that explanation, Anita? You know, there was a time when, whether you're talking about Europe or the Western Hemisphere, people did talk about open borders and open trade. And what had she? Do you think she was describing in Brazil a kind of, what do they call it in Europe, the Schengen policy where people can travel freely throughout Europe? Is that part of it, or was that part of the Hillary Clinton vision?
You know, we don't know the answer to that. If you look at the entire quote in the context, you know, it certainly can be interpreted the way that Secretary Clinton said she meant it to be interpreted, which was very much within the context of the energy markets. But Tom, you know, we're sitting here talking about material that's out in the public right now because state-sponsored hackers broke into and hacked emails from officials, high-ranking officials of Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Russian hackers. A lot of intelligence agencies are saying, as Hillary Clinton said, and Donald Trump said, you don't know.
No, we actually do know because our own government has told us this. And I have to tell you, I find it outrageous that more people aren't outraged at the idea that the Russian government is meddling so openly in our election and that we're actually talking about what they want us to talk about as opposed to their behavior.
There is that. What about the open borders comment, Chris?
Well, the challenge for Clinton on this is, and this is where I was getting earlier, and so when I called her a weak candidate, because if she had been debating anyone besides Donald Trump, they could have really capitalized on her comments, on the speeches themselves, and how much she made off of it.
Republicans have been huge on, that's a lot of money. That's true. And Donald Trump has gone up to that in the past, but Republicans have long been for open trade and the idea of a freer trade world, at least. I don't know if that's part of open borders.
Well, it should be, and I think it's one of the areas where you've got sort of a weird dynamic between the two of them, and it makes it, again, more difficult. And it's why you see the split you do right now, even with Republicans, with those with more than a college degree and those with less than a four-year college degree in terms of their support for Trump, because I do think there is support amongst the college educator for open trade, and Trump is against that, and so that definitely hurts him. But I back to the point of the money, because I do think this is one that we haven't talked about very much, and you know, I really grow weary of Hillary Clinton trying to pass herself off as some sort of middle class voter or that she claims to represent. I mean, this was a woman who is left the White House saying she was dead broke. Now it's worth over almost $500 million. She hasn't driven a car 20 years. I mean, she's just completely out of touch. And the attempt of her to cater to the Bernie Sanders wing of the party is really pathetic. I spent the entire program criticizing Donald Trump. I feel like I really had to get that in. And so from that, you've got this weird dynamic again between her with her and the leader of her party, Barack Obama, disagreeing on things like TPP because she's trying to go lower than Trump is in terms of her attempt to capitalize on the animosity toward free trade and the idea that it's sending jobs and manufacturing jobs out of our country. And I think, again, that's not who she is. And I would be willing to lay a wager, if Anita's willing to take it, of a nice dinner somewhere, that she will support TTP when she's elected, because it's just, she's disingenuous about it.
I'll leave you two to your
okay,
dinner.
Okay, Chris, you're buying.
All right, we'll see.
Hey, I've just got you for another half minute here. Anita, what are you predicting for November 8th at this point?
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that I think Hillary Clinton will be the first woman president of the United States, and that people will be surprised at how emotional that piece of history really is. I also believe there's a better than even chance today that Democrats will control the Senate. And this is what Chris was referring to at the beginning of the program. Trump's performance last night wasn't just selfish on his own behalf, but it really does hurt the rest of the party at this point.
Chris, what do you see coming November 8th? Here we are, just less than 20 days, fewer than 20 days away from it.
I can't disagree at the top of the ticket. I mean, I think it's most likely, it's very likely, if not completely likely, that Hillary Clinton is elected. I do disagree because I think both Clinton and Trump, with his attacks on the Republican establishment, have made it easier for Republicans running for the Senate and Congress to separate themselves from him. If he had made himself more tied to the party that he claims to represent, that would be more difficult. And frankly, Clinton's done us favors there, too. As she runs ads saying that he's a different type of Republican. As last night, she quotes Ronald Reagan. I mean, it's bizarre. Mm-hmm. She's quoting Reagan and lauding him, whereas Trump is being critical of him. That actually makes it easier for Republicans to hold the Senate, and I predict they will hold the House and Senate. I think they'll probably end up with 52 seats, actually, at the end of the day in the Senate. And the House, they'll probably lose a few seats. But when you're losing the presidency and you only lose a few seats, that's almost unprecedented.
Down to fewer than 20 days now. Chris Wilson, Republican pollster and strategist, thank you so much for joining us, Chris. Great to have you here. Anita Dunn, Democratic strategist, also out of Washington. Thank you very much for being with us today, Anita.
And thank you for having me, Tom.
Let's bring in a little journalistic perspective right now, if I may. McKay Coppins was in Las Vegas, remains there, was there last night as the debate went on. Senior political writer for BuzzFeed News, author of The Wilderness. McKay Coppins, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. And Abby Phillip is national political reporter for The Washington Post. She's been covering the Hillary Clinton campaign. Abby Phillip, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Abby, bottom line to your eye, your ear on the debate last night?
Well, I think that the debate really demonstrated what we've seen really from Hillary Clinton for the previous two debates, which is that she's very prepared. And she comes to that debate stage basically having memorized a kind of encyclopedia of responses to potential things that could come up and to responses to things that Trump could bring up. And what that has meant is that Trump has kind of had like a 30-minute window in which his sort of limited preparation is on display. And I think it works pretty well for him. But about 30 to 40 minutes into the debate, he kind of runs out of steam and potentially runs out of material. She doesn't. And so that's why you end up seeing so much of this imbalance between how the two of them perform, especially as you get toward the end of the debate. And Trump tends to, once he runs out of that preparation, rely on his own instincts, which typically get him into a little bit of trouble.
McKay, is this about who can memorize more debate prep?
I don't think so. I mean, look, I don't think that memorizing zingers or one-liners necessarily is a great metric for whether you're prepared to be president. But I do agree with Abby that these three presidential debates have shown us something, which is that when you get into an extended policy conversation on a national debate stage, Hillary Clinton clearly knows her stuff. Now, that you can certainly disagree with what she says, and I think that a lot of reasonable people do. But I think that at the end of the day, Donald Trump is winging it. We've seen reports repeatedly throughout this process that during the debate prep process, he is he's not focused. He has trouble concentrating. He grows bored easily. He clearly has not studied up on these issues the way that you would want a potential commander in chief to do. And I think that that's shown in these debates.
He had prepared on this front, going after Hillary Clinton on the basis of comments that have come out of WikiLeaks, that have come out of Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. Here he was.
Now, John Podesta said you have terrible instincts. Bernie Sanders said you have bad judgment. I agree with both.
Well, you should ask Bernie Sanders who he's supporting for president. And he has said, campaigned for me around the country, you are the most dangerous person to run for president in the modern history of America. I think he's right.
McKay, when they're just slugging nose to nose like that, who comes out the better?
Well, I think in that one exchange, I don't know that either of them moved a lot of voters. I think that there were several moments at last night's debate. I mean, I was watching in the kind of media center where all the press was watching in Las Vegas. And I just felt like you could almost hear the sound of, hundreds of thousands of Americans flipping off their TVs as the two of them would just yell at each other and talk over each other and kind of bitterly attack each other. I don't think that stuff really does anything except rally your base. And I think at this point, it's been clear for a couple weeks now, if not longer, that's all Donald Trump seems especially interested in. He's preaching to the choir. And, the choir is singing, but the choir is also about 35 to 40% of the country.
What's the point of preaching so hard if you've only got a third plus of the country?
Well, that's an open question. One of your earlier guests talked about the possibility of Donald Trump, you know, trying to grow this or turn this audience that he's built or this following that he's built into an audience that he can monetize after the election. I know that that seems far-fetched, but there have been so many more far-fetched things that have happened this campaign that I don't think it's totally crazy.
Donald Trump saying last night he still believes he's going to win, that everybody's getting it wrong. We're not hearing a lot of that in this hour. Listeners, you can join us. We'll turn to your calls after a short break. What did you see? What did you hear last night on that stage in Las Vegas? With McKay Coppins and Abby Phillip, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Blue Apron, providing pre-portioned, fresh ingredients with easy recipes delivered to your door. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with free shipping at blueapron.com/onpoint. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking about the last debate last night of the presidential campaign season, Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. McKay Coppins is with us, senior political writer for BuzzFeed News. Abby Phillip is here, national political reporter for The Washington Post. You can join us. What did you see and hear last night? What about Trump and women? Who's got the right stuff to be president? And how do you see the choice on November 8th? And what about after, if one of these candidates, Donald Trump, I guess, says he may not accept the outcome? How do you hear that? Strong back and forth last night. At one point, they're talking about Social Security, Medicare reforms. Questions came up there. Donald Trump called Hillary Clinton, you heard at the end of this, a nasty woman.
Will you consider a grand bargain, a deal that includes both tax increases and benefit cuts to try to save both programs?
Well, Chris, I am on record as saying that we need to put more money into the Social Security Trust Fund. That's part of my commitment to raise taxes on the wealthy. My Social Security payroll contribution will go up, as will Donald's, assuming he can't figure out how to get out of it. But what we want to do is to replenish the Social Security Trust Fund.
Right. She was jabbing him, looking for a response. I guess she got it. Such a nasty woman. We'll see what Saturday Night Live does with that. And on the front of women, well, Hillary Clinton pointed out that Donald Trump had assailed some of the women who accused him of sexual assault as liars and unattractive. He denied it last night. She dug in.
He held a number of big rallies where he said that he could not possibly have done those things to those women because they were not attractive enough for
them to
be assaulted.
I did not say that.
In fact, he went on to say...
Her two minutes.
But he did not say that.
It's her 2 minutes.
He went on to say, look at her. I don't think so. About another woman, he said, that wouldn't be my first choice. He attacked the woman reporter writing the story, called her disgusting, as he has called a number of women during this campaign. You know, Donald thinks belittling women makes him bigger. He goes after their dignity, their self-worth. And I don't think there is a woman anywhere who doesn't know what that feels like.
Tough words on a big, big block of voters. We'll look at that. Abby Phillip, McKay Coppins, please stand by. Lots of callers. Suzanne in Grinnell, Iowa. Suzanne, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. I guess I hear the pundits talk about 40% and preaching to the choir for Trump. I'm actually a Hillary supporter. But I hear the debate with the ears of the people around me. And I think that that number may be bigger than people are giving credit for it. It seems like, you know, in Britain we had Brexit and people woke up and they thought it wasn't possible. And I'm not so sure that that 40% number is what people think it is. And I think we may wake up and have a different result than people are, you know, sort of glibly saying, that's all.
Suzanne, let us look at that. McKay, I'll come first to you. We've heard sort of solidly today from a Republican strategist, Democratic strategist. Yeah, you guys, I guess that it's Hillary's. What about a Brexit scenario where we wake up the next day and oops, you know what? Nope, it's Trump.
Sure. I have heard that from a lot of people. I mean, look, the important thing to remember with the Brexit was that the polls were actually pretty close in the final days before that vote. And that is not the case with the polls right now in this presidential election. Now, that's not to say that it's over. I mean, look, there's still weeks left to go before Election Day, something dramatic could happen. Things could change. I certainly am not going to be, given my track record of very confidently predicting that Trump would not win the Republican nomination, yep. I'm not going to say that he's that there's no way he could win. But all we can go off of, and that goes for political operatives you heard in earlier this hour, and I think us, is what the public polls say. And right now, the public polls in battleground states and nationally show Trump trailing pretty badly to Hillary Clinton.
Abby, you're covering the Clinton campaign. How do they see it?
Well, just in response to the questioner, I mean, the second part of this is not just what the polls say right now, but also the structure of our presidential elections, which isn't just the popular vote. It's also the Electoral College. And the Clinton campaign specifically is intently focused on that element of the race because it allows them to kind of concentrate their efforts in a core group of seven states that will go to require them to perform well in order to get the lion's share of Electoral College votes. And at the moment, it isn't just that Trump is polling in 38-40%, but he's also trailing badly in some states that he absolutely has to win in order to win the presidency. And within those states, even more than that, he's trailing really badly in sections of the electorate that he would need to perform well with, including women who are 50% of the vote or more in some states, Hispanic voters who are a large portion of the vote and have overwhelmingly supported Hillary Clinton, African-American voters, Asian-American voters. So you have to kind of break down the vote beyond just the sort of who's up and who's down and look at the kind of state-by-state level and see how he's doing. And if Trump wants to reverse the course of where he's going right now, it has to be at this state level. He has to make some gains in some key places, including maybe Pennsylvania, maybe Florida, and maybe several other places in order to kind of reverse this trajectory that he's on.
Can I add to that three states to watch, and this is pretty remarkable, three solidly Republican states, aside from the battlegrounds that Abby just mentioned, are within striking distance for Hillary Clinton. One is Arizona, which has been a solidly Republican state. Election forecasters are now saying that it's a toss-up, if not even leaning toward a Democrat victory there. Utah, in several recent polls, is now a toss-up. And Texas is still leaning Republican, but Trump is doing worse than any Republican candidate has in recent history. And if Hillary Clinton really felt like going for it, I'm sure she could dump some money in there and make it a contest. So I think the fact that states like that – now, Trump may end up winning all three of those states, but the fact that states like that are in play with less than 3 weeks to go really says something about the state of this race.
Let's go to Texas. Austin, Texas. Woody is calling. Hi, Woody. You're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you see?
What do I see? Well, I see a lot of surface analysis of the election because of confirmation bias. So when anyone watches the information that a candidate shares, they analyze it in such a way that's favorable to that particular client.
Isn't that true of anybody who watches it? I mean, isn't that true of everybody in the country? I mean, a lot of people come at this with a, you know, predisposition one way or the other, Woody?
Well, that's true, but what that leads to is it leads to a surface analysis of the information, you know, from professionals, in a sense. So if a candidate says something shocking, they might be using that to draw attention to a particular issue, which they're going to pivot off of in a couple days or within a week.
So, last night the so-called shocking thing, and maybe more than so-called, was Donald Trump saying, hey, you know, I'll keep you in suspense about whether or not I'll accept the outcome of the vote. How do you look at that, Woody?
Well, I look at that as it is very different. So I have a feeling that we'll have to wait and see. I have a feeling that Trump will pivot off that within a couple of days. What he's drawing attention to is the fact that there have been irregularities in the past. It's not a conventional answer that people want to hear.
I mean, they've been incredibly small by all the formal reviews of voting in this country. To broadly characterize it as rigged, do you buy that?
No, I don't. I think it may be stacked, which may be a more applicable term, that the elections are stacked against an outsider
I mean, the media gave so much attention to Donald Trump, if that's what you're alluding to, that it by all accounts, helped him become one of the two candidates for the presidency. Is that stacked?
I'm not alluding to that.
Okay.
I am alluding to the fact that both of the parties are somewhat in denial with the messaging. Like, you see, the Republicans they lost in the primaries to Trump, but they're not willing to take the information that's been presented to them that they lost on message. They didn't lose on candidate.
Yeah.
They lost on their messaging.
Who are you voting for, Woody? Can you share with us who you think you'll vote for? I'll pick that up.
Well, I'm independent.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to wait for the next few weeks because, you know, a lot of information can come out in a few weeks. So, I mean, something can come out in the next couple of weeks that could vary either one of these candidates. But I think it's premature to have a final answer.
If you voted today, which way, Trump or Clinton?
If I voted today, I would have to vote for Donald Trump, but I would hope that he pivots his message to accepting the election if it's shown to be on the up and up. And I think that's what he'll do.
Woody, I appreciate your call very much. McKay Coppins, what about this notion that Donald Trump is a message bearer here and that existing parties, including the Republican Party, are ignoring the message, Woody says, out of Texas?
I think he's right about that, actually. I mean, look, I think that there's a lot of concern within the Republican Party, especially within the political class and the donor class, the elements of the party that are most averse to Donald Trump. There's a lot of concern that, you know, in the next election or the election after that, that a more savvy, more practiced, more kind of smooth Trumpian politician comes along and could actually win this election. Somebody who has the same kind of nationalist beliefs, has the same willingness to tout kind of nativist and you know, some would say racist arguments and conspiracy theories, that somebody could come along who's just a better at this, better at running a campaign, better at appearing in debates, and that could actually capture the Republican Party.
Well, what's the implication of that, McKay, though? Is the implication of that the right candidate should tell Trump supporters to shut up and sit down? Because they're incorrigible. What did Hillary Clinton say? Are they accepting Hillary Clinton's notion that they're deplorable?
They're deplorables. No. Well, I'm telling you what I think the leadership of the current Republican Party is saying, and I think that disconnect is there. That the caller that you just had has reason to, if he agrees on the issues and on the substance of what Donald Trump's campaign is about, then he has every reason in the world to be skeptical of the leadership of the Republican Party, because they do disagree fundamentally on some key issues and kind of a policy worldview. And I think that, you know, going forward after this election, the Republican Party is going to be engulfed in a civil war for years to come, where the Trumpian wing of this party is going to be trying to take over the party. And time will tell whether that happens.
We're looking at last night's debate and the short road now to Election Day. Alex in Nashville, Tennessee. Alex, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Hey, so I wanted to say, you know, as a white evangelical in the South,
okay,
this has been just a painful, painful election. My support is behind Hillary, but I think that this election is so much bigger than just these two individuals. We have, you know, we're weighing the long-term impact. As a Republican, I'm weighing the long-term impact of a very liberal Supreme Court.
You're a Republican voting for Clinton, you're saying, Alex. Did I get that right?
Correct, yes.
And okay.
A moderate, I lean Republican, but
yeah.
But I just can't side with Trump.
Why?
You know, I'm weighing the long-term impact of a liberal Supreme Court against the long-term impact of a Trump presidency, and I think a lot of people in the South are doing the same thing, and I've tried to soften my anger at Trump supporters. Because I recognize just the horrible position that this race has placed them in.
What tips you to Hillary Clinton if you're weighing those two as a Republican, evangelical? What tips you to Clinton in the end, or away from Trump, if that's a better description?
What tips me to Clinton is that Trump is masquerading as an evangelical. He's masquerading as a Republican. You know, this is a man who I don't trust to uphold the values that he, you know, picked up about 15 months ago. And so my beliefs are more in line with the positive message of Clinton. And, you know, that's why I'm focusing on the down ballot races and the local elections, which I think really is where individuals' votes have so much more impact. And I strongly encourage everyone to be politically engaged, especially at the local level.
Alex, I appreciate your call very much. Abby, what about the impact over time of the vitriolic questions that Donald Trump is raising about the integrity of the American voting system? How do you see that playing out?
It's interesting to hear this kind of evolve over time. I think Trump has actually really ratcheted it up. Even last night, his language, he talked about the media poisoning the minds of voters and saying that his opponent should not even be allowed to run, proclaiming that she's guilty without having been tried or even charged with anything.
FBI has declined to charge her, in fact.
Exactly, right. The FBI has declined to charge her. But Trump doesn't seem to even acknowledge the sort of process of how that happens. And so it's interesting to see him kind of ratchet it up bit by bit. And I think that it seems that there are a third of the voters who are Trump's base, they're his core, they love that kind of talk. There's Hillary Clinton's base who despises that kind of talk. And then there are a lot of voters in the middle who are going to be evaluating these kinds of statements. And I think it is going to be the deciding factor is going to be, does this sort of smack of kind of anti-democratic sort of leaning toward things that are not democratic values at the core of our institutions? And is that going to turn people off? I don't think we really know the answer to that yet. But I think that we're getting to that point where this question is being raised in a lot of voters' minds. And I wanted to say something to the caller. I mean, mm-hmm. Alex is a sort of perfect example of what Democrats and Republicans are seeing around the country, which is that there are a lot of moderate Republicans who are looking at Trump and they are very, very uncomfortable, unwilling to vote for him, but they are more comfortable focusing their attention down ballot. And that's going to cause some separation in these key states, especially in places like New Hampshire, where there is a long tradition of independent voters acting in that way, places like Pennsylvania and places like Ohio, where the Republican incumbents are surviving in a really toxic environment.
McKay, just a few seconds here. Do we come out of this either way with a new politics somehow? Is the needle been moved, or is this a Trump blip and then on with the parade?
No, I think that we will absolutely see different elements of both parties kind of realigning, and I think that this could have a lasting effect on what our political parties in America stand for.
McKay Coppins, senior political writer for BuzzFeed News, thank you so much. And Abby Phillip, national political reporter for The Washington Post, our thanks to you both. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.